trouble and all the anxiety and all the expense of raising. Yes, just as that man has got that son raised at last and ready to go to work and begin to do something for him and give him a rest, the law up and goes for him. And they call that government. That ain't all, nother. The law backs that old Judge Thatcher up and helps to keep me out of my property. Here's what the law does. The law takes a man worth $6,000 and upwards and jams him into an old trap of a cabin like this and lets him go round in clothes that ain't fitting for a hog. They call that government. A man can't get his rights in a government like this. Sometimes I've a mighty notion to just leave the country for good and all. Yes, and I told him so. I told old Thatcher so to his face. Lots of them heard me and could tell what I said. Says I, for 2 cents I'd leave the blamed country and never come near it again. Them's the very words. I says, look at my hat, if you call it a hat. But the lid raised up and the rest of it goes down till it's below my chin. And then it ain't rightly a hat at all, but more like my head was shoved up through a Gento stovepipe. Look at it, says I. Such a hat for me to wear. One of the wealthiest men in this town, if I could get my rights. Oh, yes. This is a wonderful government. Wonderful. Why, looky here. There was a free nigger there from Ohio. A mulatter, most as white as a white man. He had the whitest shirt on you ever see, too, and the shinest hat. And there ain't a man in that town that's got as fine clothes as what he had. And he had a gold watch and chain, and a silver-headed cane. The awfulest old gray-headed nabob in the state. And what do you think? They said he was a professor in college, and could talk all kinds of languages, and knowed everything. And that ain't the worst. They said he could vote when he was at home. Well, that let me out, thinks I. What is this country a-coming to? It was election day, and I was just about to go and vote myself if I weren't too drunk to get there. But when they told me there was a state in this country where they'd let that nigger vote, I drawed out. I says, I'll never vote again. Them's the very words I said. They all heard me. And the country may rot for all me. I'll never vote again as long as I live. And to see the cool way of that nigger, why, he wouldn't have given me the road if I hadn't shoved him out of the way. I says to the people, why ain't this nigger put up at auction and sold? That's what I want to know. And what do you reckon they said? Why, they said he couldn't be sold till he'd been in the state 6 months. And he hadn't been there that long yet. There now, that's a specimen. They call that a government that can't sell a free nigger till he's been in the state 6 months. Here's a government that calls itself a government and lets on to be a government and thinks it is a government and yet's got to set stock still for 6 whole months before it can take a hold of a prowling, thieving, infernal, white-shirted free nigger. And Pap was a-going on so, he never noticed where his old limber legs was taking him to. So he went head over heels over the tub of salt pork and barked both shins, and the rest of his speech was all the hottest kind of language, mostly hove at the nigger and the government, though he give the tub some, too, all along here and there. He hopped around the cabin considerable, first on one leg, then on the other, holding first one shin and then the other one, and at last he let out with his left foot all of a sudden and fetched the tub a rattling kick. But it weren't good judgment, because that was the boot that had a couple of his toes leaking out of the front end of it. So now he raised a howl that fairly made a body's hair raise, and down he went in the dirt and rolled there and held his toes. And the cussin' he'd done then laid over anything he had ever done previous. He said so his own self afterwards. He had heard old Salberry Hagen in his best days, and he said it laid over him, too. But I reckon that was sort of piling it on, maybe. After supper, Pap took the jug and said he had enough whiskey there for 2 drunks and 1 delirium tremens. That was always his word. I judged he would be blind drunk in about an hour, and then I would steal the key or saw myself out. one or t'other. He drank and drank and tumbled down on his blankets by and by. But luck didn't run my way. He didn't go sound asleep, but was uneasy. He groaned and moaned and thrashed around this way and that for a long time. At last I got so sleepy I couldn't keep my eyes open, all I could do. And so before I knowed what I was about, I was sound asleep and the candle burning. I don't know how long I was asleep, but all of a sudden there was an awful scream and I was up. There was Pap, looking wild and skipping around every which way and yelling about snakes. He said they was crawling up his legs, and then he would give a jump and scream and say one had bit him on the cheek, but I couldn't see no snakes. He started and run round and round the cabin, hollering, "Take him off! Take him off! He's biting me on the neck!" I never see a man look so wild in the eyes. Pretty soon he was all fagged out and fell down panting. Then he rolled over and over, wonderful fast, kicking things every which way and striking and grabbing at the air with his hands and screaming and saying there was devils a hold of him. He wore out by and by and laid still a while, moaning. Then he laid stiller and didn't make a sound. I could hear the owls and the wolves away off in the woods, and it seemed terrible still. He was laying over by the corner. By and by he raised up part way and listened with his head to one side. He says very low, "Tramp, tramp, tramp. That's the dead. Tramp, tramp, tramp. They're coming after me, but I won't go. Oh, they're here. Don't touch me. Don't. Hands off. They're cold. Let go. Oh, let a poor devil alone." Then he went down on all fours and crawled off begging them to let him alone, and he rolled himself up in his blanket and wallowed in under the old pine table, still a-begging, and then he went to crying. I could hear him through the blanket. By and by, he rolled out and jumped up on his feet looking wild, and he see me and went for me. He chased me round and round the place with a clasp knife, calling me the angel of death and saying he would kill me, and then I couldn't come for him no more. I begged and told him I was only Huck, but he laughed such a screechy laugh and roared and cussed and kept on chasing me. Once when I turned short and dodged under his arm, he made a grab and got me by the jacket between my shoulders, and I thought I was gone. But I slid out of the jacket quick as lightning and saved myself. Pretty soon he was all tired out and dropped down with his back against the door and said he would rest a minute and then kill me. He put his knife under him and said he would sleep and get strong and then he would see who was who. So he dozed off pretty soon. By and by, I got the old split-bottom chair and clumb up as easy as I could not to make any noise, and got down the gun. I slipped the ramrod down it to make sure it was loaded, and then I laid it across the turnip barrel pointing towards Pap, and set down behind it to wait for him to stir. And how slow and still the time did drag along. Chapter 7. "Get up! What you about?"
I opened my eyes and looked around, trying to make out where I was. It was after sunup, and I had been sound asleep. Pap was standing over me, looking sour, and sick, too. He says,
"What you doing with this gun?"
I judged he didn't know nothing about what he had been doing, so I says,
"Somebody tried to get in, so I was laying for him." "Why didn't you roust me out?"
"Well, I tried to, but I couldn't. I couldn't budge you."
"Well, all right. Don't stand there palavering all day. But out with you and see if there's a fish on the lines for breakfast. I'll be along in a minute."
He unlocked the door, and I cleared out up the river bank. I noticed some pieces of limbs and such things floating down and a sprinkling of bark, so I knowed the river had begun to rise. I reckoned I would have great times now if I was over at the town. The June rise used to be always luck for me. Because as soon as that rise begins, here comes cordwood floating down and pieces of log rafts, sometimes a dozen logs together, so all you have to do is catch them and sell them to the wood yards and the sawmill. I went along up the bank with one eye out for pap and t'other one out for what the rise might fetch along. Well, all at once, here comes a canoe, just a beauty, too, about 13 or 14 foot long, riding high like a duck. I shot head first off the bank, like a frog, clothes and all on, and struck out for the canoe. I just expected there'd be somebody laying down in it, because people often done that to fool folks. And when a chap had pulled a skiff out most to it, they'd raise up and laugh at him. But it weren't so this time. It was a drift canoe, sure enough, and I clumb in it and paddled her ashore. Thinks I, the old man will be glad when he sees this. She's worth $10. But when I got to shore, pap wasn't in sight yet, and as I was running her into a little creek like a gully, all hung over with vines and willows, I struck another idea. I judged I'd hide her good, and then, instead of taking to the woods when I run off, I'd go down the river about 50 mile and camp in one place for good, and not have such a rough time tramping on foot. It was pretty close to the shanty, and I thought I heard the old man coming all the time. But I got her hid, and then I out and looked around a bunch of willows, and there was the old man down the path a piece just drawing a bead on a bird with his gun. So he hadn't seen anything. When he got along, I was hard at it taking up a trot line. He abused me a little for being so slow, but I told him I fell in the river and that was what made me so long. I knowed he would see I was wet and that he would be asking questions. We got 5 catfish off the lines and went home. While we laid off after breakfast to sleep up, both of us being about wore out, I got to thinking that if I could fix up some way to keep Pap and the widow from trying to follow me, it would be a certainer thing than trusting to luck to get far enough off before they missed me. You see, all kinds of things might happen. Well, I didn't see no way for a while, but by and by Pap raised up a minute to drink another barrel of water, and he says, "Another time a man comes a-prowling round here. You roust me out, you hear? That man warn't here for no good. I'd have shot him. Next time you roust me out, you hear?" Then he dropped down and went to sleep again. But what he had been saying gave me the very idea I wanted. I says to myself, I can fix it now so nobody won't think of following me. About 12 o'clock we turned out and went along up the bank. The river was coming up pretty fast and lots of driftwood going by on the rise. By and by, along comes part of a log raft, 9 logs fast together. We went out with the skiff and towed it ashore. Then we had dinner. Anybody but Pap would have waited and seen the day through so as to catch more stuff, but that weren't Pap's style. 9 logs was enough for one time. He must shove right over to town and sell. So he locked me in and took the skiff and started off towing the raft about 3:30. I judged he wouldn't come back that night. I waited till I reckoned he had got a good start. Then I out with my saw and went to work on that log again. Before he was t'other side of the river, I was out of the hole. Him and his raft was just a speck on the water away off yonder. I took the sack of cornmeal and took it to where the canoe was hid and shoved the vines and branches apart and put it in. Then I done the same with the side of bacon, then the whiskey jug. I took all the coffee and sugar there was and all the ammunition. I took the wadding. I took the bucket and the gourd. I took a dipper and a tin cup and my old saw and 2 blankets and the skillet and the coffee pot. I took fish lines and matches and other things, everything that was worth a cent. I cleaned out the place. I wanted an axe, but there wasn't any, only the one out at the woodpile, and I knowed why I was going to leave that. I fetched out the gun, and now I was done. I had wore the ground a good deal, crawling out of the hole and dragging out so many things, so I fixed that as good as I could from the outside by scattering dust on the place, which covered up the smoothness and the sawdust. Then I fixed the piece of log back into its place, and put 2 rocks under it and 1 against it to hold it there, for it was bent up at that place and didn't quite touch ground. If you stood 4 or 5 foot away and didn't know it was sawed, you wouldn't ever notice it. And besides, this was the back of the cabin, and it weren't likely anybody would go fooling around there. It was all grass clear to the canoe, so I hadn't left a track. I followed around to see. I stood on the bank and looked out over the river. All safe. So I took the gun and went up a piece into the woods and was hunting around for some birds when I see a wild pig. Hogs soon went wild in them bottoms after they had got away from the prairie farms. I shot this fellow and took him into camp. I took the axe and smashed in the door. I beat it and hacked it considerable a-doing it. I fetched the pig in and took him back nearly to the table and hacked into his throat with the axe, and laid him down on the ground to bleed. I say ground because it was ground, hard packed and no boards. Well, next I took an old sack and put a lot of big rocks in it, all I could drag, and I started it from the pig and dragged it to the door, and through the woods down to the river and dumped it in, and down it sunk out of sight. You could easy see that something had been dragged over the ground. I did wish Tom Sawyer was there. I knowed he would take an interest in this kind of business and throw in the fancy touches. Nobody could spread himself like Tom Sawyer in such a thing as that. Well, last I pulled out some of my hair and blooded the axe good and stuck it on the back side and slung the axe in the corner. Then I took up the pig and held him to my breast with my jacket so he couldn't drip, till I got a good piece below the house and then dumped him into the river. Now I thought of something else. So I went and got the bag of meal and my old saw out of the canoe and fetched them to the house. I took the bag to where it used to stand and ripped a hole in the bottom of it with the saw, for there weren't no knives and forks on the place. Pap done everything with his clasp knife about the cooking. Then I carried the sack about 100 yards across the grass and through the willows east of the house to a shallow lake that was 5 mile wide and full of rushes, and ducks too, you might say, in the season. There was a slough or a creek leading out of it on the other side that went miles away, I don't know where, but it didn't go to the river. The meal sifted out and made a little track all the way to the lake. I dropped Pap's whetstone there too so as to look like it had been done by accident. Then I tied up the rip in the meal sack with a string so it wouldn't leak no more, and I took it and my saw to the canoe again. It was about dark now, so I dropped the canoe down the river under some willows that hung over the bank, and I waited for the moon to rise. I made fast to a willow, and then I took a bite to eat, and by and by laid down in the canoe to smoke a pipe and lay out a plan. I says to myself, they'll follow the track of that sack full of rocks to the shore, and then drag the river for me. And they'll follow that meal track to the lake and go browsing down the creek that leads out of it to find the robbers that killed me and took the things. They won't ever hunt the river for anything but my dead carcass. They'll soon get tired of that and won't bother no more about me. All right, I can stop anywhere I want to. Jackson's Island is good enough for me. I know that island pretty well and nobody ever comes there. And then I can paddle over to town nights and slink around and pick up things I want. Jackson's Island's the place. I was pretty tired, and the first thing I knowed, I was asleep. When I woke up, I didn't know where I was for a minute. I sat up and looked around, a little scared. Then I remembered. The river looked miles and miles across. The moon was so bright, I could have counted the drift logs that went a-slipping along, black and still, hundreds of yards out from shore. Everything was dead quiet, and it looked late and smelt late. You know what I mean? I don't know the words to put it in. I took a gap and a stretch and was just going to unhitch and start when I heard a sound away over the water. I listened. Pretty soon I made it out. It was that dull kind of regular sound that comes from oars working in rowlocks when it's a still night. I peeped out through the willow branches, and there it was, a skiff, away across the water. I couldn't tell how many was in it. It kept a-coming, and when it was abreast of me, I see there warn't but one man in it. Thinks I, maybe it's Pap, though I warn't expecting him. He dropped below me with the current, and by, he come a-swinging up shore in the easy water, and he went by so close I could have reached out the gun and touched him. Well, it was Pap, sure enough, and sober, too, by the way he laid to his oars. I didn't lose no time. The next minute, I was a-spinning downstream, soft but quick, in the shade of the bank. I made 2 mile and a half, and then struck out a quarter of a mile or more toward the middle of the river, because pretty soon I would be passing the ferry landing and people might see me and hail me. I got out amongst the driftwood and then laid down in the bottom of the canoe and let her float. I laid there and had a good rest and a smoke out of my pipe, looking away into the sky, not a cloud in it. The sky looks ever so deep when you lay down on your back in the moonshine. I never knowed it before, and how far a body can hear on the water such nights. I heard people talking at the ferry landing. I heard what they said, too, every word of it. One man said it was getting towards the long days and the short nights now. T'other one said this weren't one of the short ones, he reckoned. And then they laughed, and he said it over again, and they laughed again. Then they waked up another feller and told him and laughed. Well, he didn't laugh. He ripped out something brisk and said let him alone. The first fellow said he'd loathe to tell his old woman. She would think it was pretty good. But he said that weren't nothing to some things he had said in his time. I heard one man say it was nearly 3 o'clock, and he hoped daylight wouldn't wait more than about a week longer. After that, the talk got further and further away, and I couldn't make out the words any more. But I could hear the mumble, and now and then a laugh, too, but it seemed a long ways off. I was away below the ferry now. I rose up, and there was Jackson's Island, about 2.5 miles downstream, heavy timbered and standing up out of the middle of the river, big and dark and solid, like a steamboat without any lights. There weren't any signs of the bar at the head. It was all under the water now. It didn't take me long to get there. I shot past the head at a ripping rate. The current was so swift, and then I got into the dead water and landed on the side toward the Illinois shore. I run the canoe into a deep dent in the bank that I knowed about. I had to part the willow branches to get in, and when I made fast, nobody could have seen the canoe from the outside. I went up and sat down on a log at the head of the island and looked out onto the big river and the black driftwood and away over to the town 3 miles away, where there was 3 or 4 lights twinkling. A monstrous big lumber raft was about 1 mile upstream, coming along down with a lantern in the middle of it. I watched it come creeping down, and when it was most abreast of where I stood, I heard a man say, "Stern oars there! Heave her head to starboard!" I heard that just as plain as if the man was by my side. There was a little gray in the sky now, so I stepped into the woods and laid down for a nap before breakfast. Chapter 8. The sun was up so high when I waked that I judged it was after 8 o'clock. I laid there in the grass in the cool shade, thinking about things and feeling rested and rather comfortable and satisfied. I could see the sun out at 1 or 2 holes, but mostly it was big trees all about and gloomy in there amongst them. There was freckled places on the ground where the light sifted through the leaves, and the freckled places swapped about a little, showing there was a little breeze up there. A couple of squirrels sat on a limb and jabbered at me very friendly. I was powerful lazy and comfortable, didn't want to get up and cook breakfast. Well, I was dozing off again when I thinks I hears a deep sound of boom away up the river. I rouses up and rests on my elbow and listens. Pretty soon I hears it again. I hopped up and went and looked out at a hole in the leaves, and I see a bunch of smoke laying on the water a long ways up, about abreast the ferry. And there was the ferry boat, full of people, floating along down. I knowed what was the matter now. Boom! I see the white smoke squirt out of the ferry boat's side. You see, they was firing cannon over the water, trying to make my carcass come to the top. I was pretty hungry, but it weren't going to do for me to start a fire, because they might see the smoke. So I sat there and watched the cannon smoke and listened to the boom. The river was 1 mile wide there, and it always looked pretty on a summer morning. So I was having a good enough time seeing them hunt for my remainders, if I only had a bite to eat. Well, then I happened to think how they always put quicksilver and loaves of bread and float them off because they always go right to the drowned carcass and stop there. So, says I, I'll keep a lookout, and if any of them's floating around after me, I'll give them a show. I changed to the Illinois edge of the island to see what luck I could have, and I weren't disappointed. A big double loaf come along, and I most got it with a long stick, but my foot slipped and she floated out further. Of course, I was where the current set in the closest to the shore. I knowed enough for that. But by and by, along comes another one, and this time I won. I took out the plug and shook out the little dab of quicksilver and set my teeth in. It was baker's bread, what the quality eat, none of your low-down corn pone. I got a good place amongst the leaves and sat there on a log, munching the bread and watching the ferry boat, and very well satisfied. And then something struck me. I says, "Now I reckon the widow or the parson or somebody prayed that this bread would find me, and here it has gone and done it. So there ain't no doubt but there is something in that thing. That is, there's something in it when a body like the widow or the parson prays, but it don't work for me, and I reckon it don't work for only just the right kind." I lit a pipe and had a good long smoke and went on watching. The ferry boat was floating with the current, and I allowed I'd have a chance to see who was aboard when she come along, because she would come in close where the bread did. When she'd gotten pretty well along down towards me, I put out my pipe and went to where I fished out the bread, and laid down behind a log on the bank in a little open place. Where the log forked, I could peep through. By and by, she come along, and she drifted in so close that they could have run out a plank and walked ashore. Most everybody was on the boat. Pap, and Judge Thatcher, and Bessie Thatcher, and Joe Harper, and Tom Sawyer, and his old Aunt Polly, and Sid, and Mary, and plenty more. Everybody was talking about the murder, but the captain broke in and says, "Look sharp now, the current sets in the closest here, and maybe he's washed ashore and got tangled amongst the brush at the water's edge. I hope so, anyway." I didn't hope so. They all crowded up and leaned over the rails, nearly in my face, and kept still, watching with all their might. I could see them first rate, but they couldn't see me. Then the captain sung out, "Stand away!" And the cannon left off such a blast right before me that it made me deaf with the noise and pretty near blind with the smoke, and I judged I was gone. If they'd have had some bullets in, I reckon they'd got the corpse they was after. Well, I see I weren't hurt, thanks to goodness. The boat floated on and went out of sight around the shoulder of the island. I could hear the booming now and then, further and further off, and by and by, after an hour, I didn't hear it no more. The island was 3 mile long. I judged they had got to the foot and was giving it up, but they didn't yet a while. They turned around the foot of the island and started up the channel on the Missouri side, under steam, and booming once in a while as they went. I crossed over to that side and watched them. When they got abreast the head of the island, they quit shooting and dropped over to the Missouri shore and went home to the town. I knowed I was all right now. Nobody else would come a-hunting after me. I got my traps out of the canoe and made me a nice camp in the thick woods. I made a kind of a tent out of my blankets to put things under so the rain couldn't get at them. I catched a catfish and haggled him open with my saw, and towards sundown I started my campfire and had supper. Then I set out a line to catch some fish for breakfast. When it was dark, I sat by my campfire smoking, and feeling pretty satisfied. But by and by, it got sort of lonesome, and so I went and sat on the bank and listened to the currents washing along, and counted the stars and drift logs and rafts that come down, and then went to bed. There ain't no better way to put in time when you are lonesome. You can't stay so. You soon get over it. And so for 3 days and nights, no difference, just the same thing. But the next day I went exploring around down through the island. I was boss of it. It all belonged to me, so to say, and I wanted to know all about it. But mainly I wanted to put in the time. I found plenty strawberries, ripe and prime, and green summer grapes, and green raspberries, and the green blackberries was just beginning to show. They would all come handy by and by, I judged. Well, I went fooling along in the deep woods till I judged I weren't far from the foot of the island. I had my gun along, but I hadn't shot nothing. It was for protection. Thought I would kill some game now home. About this time, I might have near stepped on a good-sized snake, and it went sliding off through the grass and flowers, and I after it, trying to get a shot at it. I clipped along, and all of a sudden I bounded right onto the ashes of a campfire that was still smoking. My heart jumped up amongst my lungs. I never waited to look further, but uncocked my gun and went sneaking back on my tiptoes as fast as ever I could. Every now and then I stopped a second amongst the thick leaves and listened, but my breath come so hard I couldn't hear nothing else. I slunk along another piece further, then listened again, and so on, and so on. If I see a stump, I took it for a man. If I trod on a stick and broke it, it made me feel like a person had cut one of my breasts in two, and I only got half, and the short half, too. When I got to camp, I weren't feeling very brash. There weren't much sand in my craw. But I says, this ain't no time to be fooling around. So I got all my traps into my canoe again, so as to have them out of sight, and I put out the fire and scattered the ashes around to look like an old last year's camp, and then clumb a tree. I reckon I was up in the tree 2 hours, but I didn't see nothing. I didn't hear nothing. I only thought I heard and seen as much as 1,000 things. Well, I couldn't stay up there forever, so at last I got down, but I kept in the thick woods and on the lookout all the time. All I could get to eat was berries and what was left over from breakfast. By the time it was night, I was pretty hungry. So when it was good and dark, I slid out from shore before moonrise and paddled over to the Illinois bank, about 1/4 mile. I went out into the woods and cooked a supper, and I had about made up my mind I would stay there all night when I hear a plunkety-plunk, plunkety-plunk, and says to myself, horses coming, and next I hear people's voices. I got everything into the canoe as quick as I could, and then went creeping through the woods to see what I could find out. I hadn't got far when I hear a man say, "We better camp here, if we can find a good place. The horses is about beat out. Let's look around." I didn't wait, but shoved out and paddled away easy. I tied up in the old place and reckoned I would sleep in the canoe. I didn't sleep much. I couldn't, somehow, for thinking, and every time I waked up I thought somebody had me by the neck, so the sleep didn't do me no good. By and by, I says to myself, I can't live this way. I'm a-going to find out who it is that's here on this island with me. I'll find it out or bust. Well, I felt better right off. So I took my paddle and slid out from shore just a step or two, and then let the canoe drop along down amongst the shadows. The moon was shining, and outside of the shadows, it made most as light as day. I poked along well onto 1 hour. Everything still as rocks and sound asleep. Well, by this time, I was most down to the foot of the island. A little ripply, cool breeze begun to blow, and that was as good as saying the night was about done. I give her a turn with the paddle and brung her nose to shore. Then I got my gun and slipped out and into the edge of the woods. I sat down there on a log and looked out through the leaves. I see the moon go off watch and the darkness begin to blanket the river. But in a little while, I see a pale streak over the treetops, and know the day was coming. So I took my gun and slipped off towards where I had run across the campfire, stopping every minute or two to listen. But I hadn't no luck somehow. I couldn't seem to find the place. But by and by, sure enough, I catched a glimpse of fire, away through the trees. I went for it, cautious and slow. By and by, I was close enough to have a look. And there laid a man on the ground. It most give me the fantods. He had a blanket around his head, and his head was nearly in the fire. I sat there behind a clump of bushes, in about 6 foot of him, and kept my eyes on him steady. It was getting gray daylight now. Pretty soon he gapped and stretched himself, and hove off the blanket, and it was Miss Watson's Jim. I bet I was glad to see him. I says, "Hello, Jim," and skipped out. He bounced up and stared at me wild. Then he drops down on his knees and puts his hands together and says, "Don't hurt me. Don't. I hain't ever done no harm to a ghost. I always lied dead people and done all I could for 'em. You go and get in the river again where you belongs, and don't do nothing to old Jim. I does always your friend." Well, I weren't long making him understand I weren't dead. I was ever so glad to see Jim. I weren't lonesome now. I told him I weren't afraid of him telling the people where I was. I talked along, but he only sat there and looked at me, never said nothing. Then I says, "It's good daylight. Let's get breakfast. Make up your campfire good."
"What's the use of making up the campfire to cook strawberries and such truck? But you got a gun, hain't you? Then we can get something better than strawberries."
"Strawberries and such truck," I says. "Is that what you live on?"
"I couldn't get nothing else," he says.
"Why, how long you been on the island, Jim?"
"I come here the night arter you's killed."
"What? All that time?"
"Yes, indeedy."
"And ain't you had nothing but that kind of rubbish to eat?"
"No, sir. Nothing else."
"Well, you must be most starved, ain't you?"
"I reckon I could eat a horse. I think I could. How long you been on the island?"
"Since the night I got killed."
"No. Why, what has you lived on?" "But you got a gun." "Oh, yes, you got a gun. That's good. Now you kill something, and I'll make up the fire."
So we went over to where the canoe was, and while he built a fire in a grassy open place amongst the trees, I fetched meal and bacon and coffee, and coffee pot and frying pan, and sugar and tin cups, and the nigger was set back considerable because he reckoned it was all done with witchcraft. I catched a good big catfish, too, and Jim cleaned him with his knife and fried him. When breakfast was ready, we lolled on the grass and eat it smoking hot. Jim laid it in with all his might, for he was most about starved. Then, when we had got pretty well stuffed, we laid off and lazied. By and by, Jim says,
"But looky here, Huck, who was it that us killed in that shanty, if it weren't you?"
Then I told him the whole thing, and he said it was smart. He said Tom Sawyer couldn't get up no better plan than what I had. Then I says, "How do you come to be here, Jim, and how did you get here?" He looked pretty uneasy and didn't say nothing for a minute. Then he says,
"Maybe I better not tell."
"Why, Jim?"
"Well, there's reasons. But you wouldn't tell on me if I was to tell you, would you, Huck?"
"Blamed if I would, Jim."
"Well, I believe you, Huck. I run off."
"Jim!"
"But mind, you said you wouldn't tell. You know you said you wouldn't tell, Huck."
"Well, I did. I said I wouldn't, and I'll stick to it. Honest Injun, I will. People would call me a low-down abolitionist and despise me for keeping mum, but that don't make no difference. I ain't a-going to tell, and I ain't a-going back there anyways. So now, let's know all about it."
"Well, you see, it is this way. Old Mrs., that's Miss Watson, she pecks on me all the time and treats me putter rough, but she allus says she wouldn't sell me down to Orleans. But I noticed there was a nigger trader round the place considerable lately, and I begin to get uneasy. Well, one night, I creeps to the do', pooty late, and the do' weren't quite shit, and I hear old missus tell the widder she gwine to sell me down to Orleans. But she didn't want to, but she could get $800 for me, and it is such a big stack of money she couldn't resist. The widder, she tried to get her to say she wouldn't do it, but I never waited to hear the rest. I lit out mighty quick, I tell you. I tuck out and shinned down the hill and spec to steal a skiff long to show summers above the town, but they was people a-stirring yet. So I hid in the old tumble-down cooper shop on the bank to wait for everybody to go away. Well, I was there all night. There was somebody round all the time. Long about 6 in the morning, skiffs began to go by, and about 8 or 9, every skiff that went long was talking about how your pap come over to town and says you's killed. These last skiffs was full of ladies and gentlemen a-going over to see the place. Sometimes they'd pull up at the show and take a rest before they started across, so by the talk I got to know all about the killing. I was powerful sorry you's killed, Huck, but I ain't no more now. I laid there under the shavings all day. I was hungry, but I weren't afeard, because I knowed old missus and the widder was going to start at the camp meeting right arter breakfast and be gone all day, and they knows I go off with the cattle about daylight, so they wouldn't expect to see me round the place, and so they wouldn't miss me till arter dark in the evening. The other servants wouldn't miss me, 'cause they'd shin out and take holiday, soon as de old folks is out in de way. Well, when it come dark, I tuck out up the river road, and went about 2 mile or more to where there warn't no houses. I'd made up my mind about what I's a-gwine to do. You see, if I kept on trying to get away afoot, the dogs would track me. If I stole a skiff to cross over, they'd miss that skiff, you see, and they'd know about where I'd land on the other side and want to pick up my track. So I says a raft is what I's order. It don't make no track. Now I see a light a-coming round the pond by-me-by, so I wade in and shove a log ahead of me, and swum more'n halfway across the river, and got in amongst the driftwood, and kept my head down low, and kinder swum again to current till the raft come along. Then I swum to the stern of it, and tuck a holt. It clouded up, and was pretty dark for a little while, so I clumb up and laid down on the planks. The men is all way yonder in the middle where the lantern was. The river was a-risin', and they was a good current. So I reckon at by 4 in the morning, I'll be 25 mile down the river, and then I'd slip in, just before daylight, and swim ashore, and take to the woods on the Illinois side. But I didn't have no luck. When we is most down to the head of the island, a man begin to come aft with the lantern. I see it warn't no use for it to wait, so I slid overboard and struck out for the island. Well, I had a notion I could land most anywheres, but I couldn't. Bank too bluff. I was most to the foot of the island before I found a good place. I went into the woods and judged I wouldn't fool with rafts no more, long as they moved their lantern round so. I had my pipe and a plugger dog leg and some matches in my cap, and they weren't wet, so I is all right. And so you ain't had no meat nor bread to eat all this time? Why didn't you get mud turkles? How are you gwine to get 'em? You can't slip up on 'em and grab 'em. And how's a body gwine to hit 'em with a rock? How could a body do it in the night? And I weren't gwine to show myself on the bank in the daytime.
Well, that's so. You've had to keep in the woods all the time, of course. Did you hear 'em shooting the cannon?
Oh, yes. I know they was arter you. I see 'em go by here, watch 'em through the bushes.
Some young birds come along, flying a yard or two at a time and lighting. Jim said it was a sign it was going to rain. He said it was a sign when young chickens flew that way, and so he reckoned it was the same way when young birds done it. I was going to catch some of them, but Jim wouldn't let me. He said it was death. He said his father laid mighty sick once, and some of them catched a bird, and his old granny said his father would die, and he did. And Jim said you mustn't count the things you are going to cook for dinner, because that would bring bad luck. The same if you shook the tablecloth after sundown. And he said if a man owned a beehive, and that man died, the bees must be told about it before sunup the next morning, or else the bees would all weaken down and quit work and die. Jim said bees wouldn't sting idiots, but I didn't believe that, 'cause I'd tried them lots of times myself, and they wouldn't sting me. I'd heard about some of these things before, but not all of them. Jim knowed all kinds of signs. He said he knowed most everything. I said it looked to me like all the signs was about bad luck, and so I asked him if there weren't any good luck signs. He says,
"Mighty few, and they ain't no use to a body. What you want to know when good luck's a-coming for? Want to keep it off?" And he said, "If you's got hairy arms and a hairy breast, it's a sign that you are gwine to be rich. Well, there's some use in a sign like that, 'cause it's so fur ahead. You see, maybe you's got to be poor a long time first, and so you might get discouraged and kill yourself for you didn't know by the sign that you gwine to be rich by-me-by."
"Have you got hairy arms and a hairy breast, Jim?"
"What's the use to ask that question? Don't you see I has?"
"Well, are you rich?"
"No, but I've been rich once, and I gwine to be rich again. Once, I had $14, but I took to speculating and got busted out."
"What did you speculate in, Jim?"
"Well, first, I tackled stock."
"What kind of stock?"
"Why, livestock. cattle, you know. I put $10 in a cow. But I ain't gwine to rest no more money in stock. The cow up and died on my hands.
So you lost the $10?
No, I didn't lose it all. I only lost about 9 of it. I sold the hide and tallow for $1.10.
You had $5.10 left. Did you speculate any more?
Yes. You know that one-legged nigger that belongs to old Mr. Bradish? Well, he sought up a bank. And say anybody that put in a dollar would get $4 more at the end of the year. Well, all the niggers went in, but they didn't have much. I was the only one that had much. So I stuck out for more than $4. And I said if I didn't get it, I'd start a bank myself. Well, of course, that nigger want to keep me out of the business because he say they want business enough for 2 banks. So he say I could put in my $5 and he pay me $35 at the end of the year. So I done it. Then I reckoned I'd invest the $35 right off and keep things a-moving. There was a nigger named Bob that had catched a wood flat, and his master didn't know it, and I bought it off of him and told him to take the $35 when the end of the year came, but somebody stole the wood flat that night, and next day, the one-legged nigger said the bank is busted, so they didn't none of us get no money.
What did you do with the 10 cents, Jim?
Well, I was going to spend it, but I had a dream. And the dream told me to give it to a nigger named Balaam. Balaam's ass, they call him for short. He's one of them chuckleheads, you know. But he's lucky, they say, and I see I weren't lucky. The dream say let Balaam invest the 10 cents and he'd make a raise for me. Well, Balaam, he took the money, and when he was in church, he heard the preacher say that whoever give to the poor, lend to the Lord, and bound to get his money back 100 times. So Balaam, he took and gave the 10 cents to the poor, and laid low to see what was going to come of it.
Well, what did come of it, Jim?
Nothing never come of it. I couldn't manage to collect that money no way, and Balaam, he couldn't. I ain't going to lend no more money down I see the security. Bound to get your money back 100 times, the preacher says. If I could get the 10 cents back, I'd call it squire and be glad of the chance.
Well, it's all right anyway, Jim, long as you're going to be rich again sometime or other.
Yes, and I's rich now, come to look at it. I owns myself, and I's worth $800. I wished I had the money. I wouldn't want no more.
Chapter 9. I wanted to go and look at a place right about the middle of the island that I'd found when I was exploring. So we started and soon got to it, because the island was only 3 miles long and 1/4 mile wide. This place was a tolerable long steep hill or ridge, about 40 foot high. We had a rough time getting to the top. The sides were so steep and the bushes so thick. We tramped and clumb around all over it, and by and by I found a good big cavern in the rock, most up to the top on the side towards Illinois. The cavern was as big as 2 or 3 rooms bunched together, and Jim could stand up straight in it. It was cool in there. Jim was up for putting our traps in there right away, but I said we didn't want to be climbing up and down there all the time. Jim said if we had the canoe hid in a good place and had all the traps in the cavern, we could rush there if anybody was to come to the island, and they would never find us without dogs. And besides, he said them little birds had said it was going to rain, and did I want the things to get wet. So we went back and got to the canoe and paddled up abreast the cavern and lugged all the traps up there. Then we hunted up a place close by to hide the canoe in, amongst the thick willows. We took some fish off of the lines and set them again, and begun to get ready for dinner. The door of the cavern was big enough to roll a hogshead in, and on one side of the door the floor stuck out a little bit and was flat and a good place to build a fire on. So we built it there and cooked dinner. We spread the blankets inside for a carpet and eat our dinner in there. We put all the other things handy at the back of the cavern. Pretty soon it darkened up and begun to thunder and lighten, so the birds was right about it. Directly, it begun to rain, and it rained like all fury, too, and I never see the wind blow so. It was one of those regular summer storms. It would get so dark that it looked all blue-black outside and lovely. And the rain would thrash along by so thick that the trees off a little ways looked dim and spider-webby. And here would come a blast of wind that would bend the trees down and turn up the pale underside of the leaves. And then a perfect ripper of a gust would follow along and set the branches to tossing their arms as if they was just wild. And next, when it was just about the bluest and blackest, pfst, it was as bright as glory, and you'd have a little glimpse of treetops a-plunging about, away off yonder in the storm, hundreds of yards further than you could see before. Dark as sin again in a second, and now you'd hear the thunder let go with an awful crash, and then go rumbling, grumbling, tumbling down the sky towards the underside of the world, like rolling empty barrels downstairs, where it's long stairs and they bounce a good deal, you know. "Jim, this is nice," I says. "I wouldn't want to be nowhere else but here. Pass me along another hunk of fish and some hot cornbread."
"Well, you wouldn't have been here if it hadn't have been for Jim. You'd have been down there in the woods without any dinner and getting most drowned, too. That you would, honey. Chickens knows when it's going to rain, and so do the birds, child."
The river went on raising and raising for 10 or 12 days, till at last it was over the banks. The water was 3 or 4 foot deep on the island, in the low places, and on the Illinois bottom. On that side it was a good many miles wide, but on the Missouri side it was the same old distance across, a half a mile, because the Missouri shore was just a wall of high bluffs. Daytimes we paddled all over the island in the canoe. It was mighty cool and shady in the deep woods, even if the sun was blazing outside. We went winding in and out amongst the trees, and sometimes the vines hung so thick we had to back away and go some other way. Well, on every old broken-down tree, you could see rabbits and snakes and such things. And when the island had been overflowed a day or two, they got so tame on account of being hungry that you could paddle right up and put your hand on them if you wanted to. But not the snakes and turtles. They would slide off in the water. The ridge our cabin was in was full of them. We could have had pets enough if we wanted them. One night we catched a little section of a lumber raft, nice pine planks. It was 12 foot wide and about 15 or 16 foot long, and the top stood above water 6 or 7 inches, a solid level floor. We could see saw logs go by in the daylight sometimes, but we let them go. We didn't show ourselves in daylight. Another night, when we was up at the head of the island, just before daylight, here comes a frame house down on the west side. She was a two-story and tilted over considerable. We paddled out and got aboard, clumb in at an upstairs window, but it was too dark to see yet, so we made the canoe fast and set in her to wait for daylight. The light begun to come before we got to the foot of the island. Then we looked in at the window. We could make out a bed and a table and 2 old chairs, and lots of things around about on the floor, and there was clothes hanging against the wall. There was something laying on the floor in the far corner that looked like a man, so Jim says,
"Hello, you!"
But it didn't budge. So I hollered again, and then Jim says,
"The man ain't asleep. He's dead. You hold still. I'll go and see."
He went and bent down and looked and says,
"It's a dead man. Yes, indeedy. Naked, too. He's been shot in the back. I reckon he's been dead 2 or 3 days. Come in, Huck, but don't look at his face. It's too ghastly."
I didn't look at him at all. Jim throwed some old rags over him, but he needn't done that. I didn't want to see him. There was heaps of old greasy cards scattered around over the floor, and old whiskey bottles, and a couple of masks made out of black cloth, and all over the walls was the ignorantest kind of words and pictures made with charcoal. There was 2 old dirty calico dresses and a sunbonnet and some women's underclothes hanging against the wall, and some men's clothing, too. We put the lot into the canoe. It might come good. There was a boy's old speckled straw hat on the floor. I took that, too. And there was a bottle that had had milk in it, and it had a rag stopper for a baby to suck. We would have took the bottle, but it was broke. There was a seedy old chest and an old hair trunk with the hinges broke. They stood open, but there weren't nothing left in them that was any account. The way things were scattered about, we reckoned the people left in a hurry and weren't fixed so as to carry off most of their stuff. We got an old tin lantern and a butcher knife without any handle, and a brand new Barlow knife worth 2 bits in any store, and a lot of tallow candles, and a tin candlestick, and a gourd, and a tin cup, and a ratty old bed quilt off the bed, and a reticule with needles and pins and beeswax and buttons and thread and all such truck in it, and a hatchet and some nails, and a fish line as thick as my little finger with some monstrous hooks on it, and a roll of buckskin, and a leather dog collar, and a horseshoe, and some vials of medicine that didn't have no label on them. And just as we was leaving, I found a tolerable good curry comb,